To me, Father Christmas was my grandfather Bill Simmons. His white hair and his beard, his bulgy eyes, and his pleasant demeanor disclosed his inner self. He was a gentle hoarder of artifacts, items, things that go toot in the night. His garage, tucked away at the end of a long yard in Coaldale, was filled with Victorian tables, old Edison machines, pictures of grand uncles and aunts, and gas pumps. Dusty stuffed teddy bears, dolls in pink dresses with only one eye, and toys that were made of cast iron. On the morning of Christmas 1949, Santa left me a special gift under the tree, a gift that held my biggest hopes and dreams, a toy that would complete my never-ending collection of dirigibles, airships, zeppelins. Ripping off the wrapping paper, there it was, a cast-iron pull toy in the shape of a zeppelin, bruised and banged, losing its silvery-gray shine with one wheel bent out of shape. Father Christmas gave me my most beloved gift ever, a magical original, although worn from its years of hibernation, an original dent cast-iron zeppelin. The National Museum of Industrial History in Bethlehem hosts a special exhibit showcasing cast-iron toys gathered from the collection of toy enthusiasts, including a remarkable family whose dream of cast-iron toys began in an iron foundry. Henry Dent's Dent Hardware Company became the Dent Hardware Cast Iron Toy Company as well. Incidentally, I lost that zeppelin in the rush of life, a cherished gift from my grandfather and the Dent Airship Collection. But just honestly, 2 hours ago, my wife Kate purchased one online. The story continues. Joining us this day is a family member, Peter C. Dent, president of CDG Environmental Corporation, former Da Vinci Science Center chairman, and president of Leonardo da Vinci's horse. This is Lehigh Valley Art Salon, and you are tuned in to WDIY 88.1, Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we chat today with Glenn Kaler, director of marketing and public relations at the National Museum of Industrial History, and with longtime friend, Peter Dent. Welcome, Peter. Welcome, Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be here.
And that's a true story. I don't know where my grandfather got that zeppelin, but it certainly was a Dent toy that I cherished when I had it.
It's a great story.
Thank you.
They were sold far and wide around the United States for a long time, dating back to 1886 or so.
Oh, my. And all kinds, not just your dirigibles, fire engines and horses and little toy guns and
ships.
whole bunch of things.
Ships. It's interesting, the collection that you can currently see at the National Museum of Industrial History. This year, as Glenn, you were saying, is all Dent. It's all from the Dent collections. And it is. It's incredibly diverse, but I noticed the one through line seems to be wheels or movement, where there's wagons and go-karts and fire engines and everything imagined. The Zeppelin has wheels.
Yes, it does. It was a pull toy, actually.
And I think it's easy to forget now that they're collectibles that they were toys.
Well, back then you didn't have drones, and if you wanted them to move, you had to, you know, push them around on the floor. I can remember very vividly my brother Charlie, sister Lisa, and myself as kids in our carpet in our living room, playing with these old toys. In particular, I like the steamship, and be rolling them around. And so, toys were the main, or wheels were the main mechanism for movement.
We talked about indestructibility. Were they really, Peter?
Well, not exactly. with my uncles, my father plus five other uncles, and then he had three other siblings, there were a total of eight in my father's family, and they would take them out sometimes and do a little field testing with them, putting them under the wheels of a truck or even a trolley car, and seeing how the aluminum toys and iron toys would hold up.
Wonderful, wonderful. And this all came about because of Henry Dent.
Yes, this is my great-grandfather who came to the United States in 1866 and told he was a really enigmatic guy. My Uncle Dick, who's worked with the Dent manufacturing and hardware for a long time, he said he was just really quite the salesman and then formed his own company with several partners and doing mostly hinges and hardware for class. They also made ice boxes and other metalwork. And they had as many as 500 people working there at one point in time and went on to be in the Dent family leadership for three generations.
And it was located in Fullerton, wasn't it?
It was Fullerton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then in 1956, there was a separation between the Dents and the partners that founded it, particularly the Newhart family, and then became Dent Manufacturing, which is a company that my my uncle, another Henry Dent, Hal Dent, ran until was sold off about 1985 to the Dodge family, and now it's at least two generations in the Dodge family.
Right. Glenn, how did this come about at the National Museum of Industrial History?
It was sort of the perfect thing for us. We had done a train exhibit a couple of years ago around holiday time, and you know, it's a kind of an ubiquitous thing. You know, a lot of people do train exhibits, and our curator happened to be attending a talk that Peter and Charlie had given at a local historical society, and thought, you know, this would be the perfect kind of a holiday thing. You know, a lot of kids used to get these cast iron toys when they were kids. I had cast iron toys when I was a kid, passed down from my father. I don't know if they were Dent, so they could be. And, you know, it kind of came together really well. The family was, you know, very generous in loaning us their personal artifacts for us to use. And, you know, it's the perfect sort of thing because we are the National Museum of Industrial History, so we like to tell stories of national significance. And a lot of people forget that, you know, back in the days of Bethlehem Steel, there were a lot of other companies in the area that were doing things of national importance, whether it was the cement industry you know, the textile industry, a railroad. You know, we had these little foundries here, like Dent Hardware, when it started, it was smaller and grew into a national company. As Pete mentioned, it was, you know, sending toys all over the country. And you know, so it was sort of the perfect thing for us to do for the holidays, and we're really glad it came together. This is the second year that we're doing it now.
And the exhibit, I should share with our listeners, runs through January 12th, is that right,
Yes,
Glenn?
Correct.
So January 12th, and later on a little bit in the program, we'll talk about some of the programming coming up in conjunction with the exhibit.
Yes.
But I'm curious, how did the company didn't start out, Henry H. didn't start with a toy company?
No, it was more on just castings of hardware, hinges, all kinds of things that make parts come together for appliances, and that was really their mainstay.
Okay.
And it was, you know, the toys were just kind of a secondary thing as far as what I was familiar with. That they made for, you know, about 40 years, like thinking in the 1930s, and then discontinued it. I think one of the things that happened was that they had developed the use of die casting in the technology, and then was followed by a variety of competitors. And with die casting, it just makes the ability to produce them cheaper and in high quantities, and maybe flooded the market a bit. Mm-hmm. And but they had always other interests, but this was more or less a sideline.
So that before that, there a lot of the toys were cast in sand.
Would that be correct?
Well, they would be more of a investment casting, which is akin to the lost wax.
Oh, I see.
And then the die casting is where you put the metal that's of a lower temperature into a casting of, or a mold that is something of a higher temperature, so that flows out readily and is pushed out under pressure. Some similarities to some of the work with, now would be more in the art area, maybe more shelling and casting from, like sand molds.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't expect you to know this, the answer to this question, but is there any historical fact as to who designed these particular molds for the company?
Of the toys.
Yeah, of the toys.
I'm really not sure. My Uncle Dick did a good bit of design of all kinds of things, but that was really before his time and his engagement with the company. I really don't know who some of the artists were that developed them.
It's probably family, though, don't you think?
Might have been. My great-grandfather had some artistic talent, as well as my grandfather. Of course, my Uncle Charlie was very good, but he had nothing to do with the foundry, really, other than going up as a kid. And
but yet there is that link, Peter. There is that link between the creativity of creating something from nothing, because his horse was, of course, the horse
Charlie's.
The horse that never was, and he made it happen. And this certainly is the toys that certainly were, because they were there and they were international. And I saw that link when I was thinking about you and Charlie about the company, and I thought how wonderful this creative force comes around and around and around. So I would have imagined that your parents would have said, Charlie, Peter, I want you to get out there and work in the foundry, right?
Well, thankfully, my parents didn't say that, and also my uncles who were in the business, they really encouraged us to do what we wanted to do, and I think for them it had become quite a burden, third generation, and Charlie and I would have been naturals to have been involved with the business, but you know, Charlie had a very successful career in politics, and I've had a very interesting and diverse career, and I'm glad I was able to choose my own path versus being pulled into being a fourth generation and keeping the continuity going.
Good. For those of our listeners, we're talking about the late Charles C. Dent, who was the creator of Leonardo da Vinci's horse. And we can talk a little bit maybe more about that if we have time in the next segment. But yes, I was so impressed by that.
And the toys is interesting. We were talking a little bit before we came on the air, thinking of it as at Christmas time in the exhibit. You were pointing out, Peter, that the toys like that, the significant iron toys, children didn't get 30 gifts.
No, not at all. It wasn't. It wasn't like it is today, or with all the shopping malls. But even my aunts and uncles, whose family were making toys and in the business, they only got one toy at Christmas each year. That was it. Wasn't lots and lots of stuff that was there, and so it was really quite a special thing.
It's interesting that they would have been collectible in that sense then, and important, and now collectible because they're rare in a way, but also they're beautiful. I was looking at, I have to admit, I've not seen the exhibit yet. I'll be going this week. The images that Glenn shared with me of the toys are just beautiful. They're really intricate. They're beautifully made.
Yeah, they're very artistic. They're hand-painted. They are gorgeous pieces. They're almost artwork in a sense.
Great. The National Museum of Industrial History, incidentally, as you know, is located on the Steel Stacks campus on the former Bethlehem Steel site at 602 East 2nd Street. This is an exhibit coming up that you cannot miss, especially during this season.
Runs again through January 12th. At this coming year.
Yes, and we'll be right back.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
And we're back. Welcome. This is Lehigh Valley Arts Salon, and we are chatting, of course, today with Glenn Kaler, Director of Marketing and Public Relations of the National Museum of Industrial History, and with our good friend Peter Dent. And this is so interesting. And some of these toys are interesting in themselves. My Zeppelin that I'm getting in a couple of days, that I lost 50, 70 years ago. I was very sad about that. But I'm going to show you one of these toys, and I'm going to hold it up to the microphone real close, so you stick your ear in there, and you'll be able to see this, I'm sure. Peter?
Well, there were a lot of different toys that were made, and lots. I like, you know, ambulances, planes, fire trucks. I know one of the family favorites was the Freeman's milk truck from Freeman's Dairy. Ice cream trucks and, you know, ships, steamboats, all kinds of different vehicles. I always liked myself the horse-drawn fire trucks, and you know, with the hook and ladder, you know, with the ladders, and to me it just always had a special appeal. Plus, you also have the animals there, and in terms of age, you can to some extent date them. The motorized toys were ones that came later, obviously, than those that were horse-drawn. You know, 1896. That's yes. All that there really was the horse-drawn. That, you know, so yeah. Later on, seeing, you know, the mechanization and motorization of these vehicles. But so for me, and I was always drawn to that. Plus, having been involved for a long time with creating a horse sculpture, mm-hmm. Leonardo da Vinci's horse, I have always enjoyed those that were horse or oxen drawn.
Wow.
Well, I saw an image of a goat cart, which I'm sorry, I'm going yes. to have to find when I get there. I love that. But speaking of the horse, for our listeners again, it is interesting. A couple hundred years of family involvement with casting in one way or another. Could we just take a moment, which is part of the exhibit at the museum, and talk a little bit about the horse?
Yeah, it's just amazing as I reflect on this and what's going on at the museum and just our discussion now about these techniques of casting are millennia old, and of course Leonardo da Vinci developed some casting techniques that were used for the first time in art in basically some areas on lost wax that were just being used in military and other places. And here the Dent family started to expand toy business into a different you know, with the die cast parts to you know, propagate making of replicas. But it's just amazing how much commonality and the technology just has evolved over the centuries.
Yes. And that horse was magnificent. I just want to put in a plug for myself. I was Leonardo da Vinci for Leonardo da Vinci's horse, where we would go from school to school and talk about Leonardo. The horse and how it was created. And then I was blessed with going to da Vinci with you, Peter, and the family. That was an exciting time in our lives. Kate went as well.
When the horse has been shared with the communities abroad and here in Allentown, our sister city is Vinci, is it not?
Yes. We signed a protocol in 2001, and both Allentown, the birthplace of my uncle, late Charles C. Dent, and Vinci, the birthplace of Leonardo, which is in the county of Florence. It's about 40 minutes due west of Florence itself, have in their town centers the same sculpture mm-hmm. of they have an 8-foot sculpture. We have a 12-foot sculpture in Allentown, and really marks their town center. And so we talk about the Renaissance of Allentown, and this is something that is not just lip service, but is literally cast in bronze, and spans the work of several hundred centuries.
So maybe Leonardo da Vinci can come and visit the Museum of Industrial History.
That'd be great.
I was going to say, one of the things I noticed in looking at the images of the toys, a lot of the earlier ones, you're right, they're horse-drawn, and there's a wheel mounted under. The horse is almost like a flying horse off.
Yeah, you can push them around.
Yeah.
And what's also interesting is, especially if you... we don't have them in the exhibit, but if you take a look at the catalogs or online, they have some of the old catalogs. You know, there's toys for girls. There was a vacuum cleaner. There was the, I think it was the Toonerville trolley.
Yes.
Charlie had told me it was a very popular one at the time, which I think tied in with a comic or something like that.
Yeah.
Cartoon, yeah. So that was a very, very popular one at the time, apparently. So it's interesting going through the catalog, not just of the things that we have in the exhibit, but you know, even doing some further research, getting inspired on this and going and looking at all the different things as well.
Well, also the horses would move to an extent, a little bit of galloping.
Oh.
And then one of the things I always liked with the steamer was that it was on an eccentric. So when you rolled it, it would kind of go up and down as though we're going through the waves. And of course, you know, art and sculpture in motion was something that always fascinated Leonardo da Vinci as well.
Yes, let's show the folks at home this.
Well, I was going to say, honestly, the horse, the da Vinci horse, the Il Cavallo, the horse that was finally cast and built, has a sense of fluidity and motion. It's a beautiful sculpt. And to look at the toys, the horses really caught my eye because they are beautifully done. There's a kind of love for these beautiful animals.
Which brings us, these were hand-painted, were they not, Glenn?
Yes, they were. They
amazing. Were. And what we tell people is, please, when you find an artifact like this from ancient times, don't repaint it or spray paint it. Just leave it the way it is. It's much more valuable if you don't paint it.
Yeah, and actually it was interesting talking to Charlie last year. He had said that, you know, there's all these little variations of the different toys. You know, some have different colors because whoever was painting that day just felt like that's how it was going to go. So it's very, you know, it's not the mass process that you see today. Everything's identical. You know, they did have these little flares to them, or, you know, it was a very personal process. So it's interesting looking at how things used to be made compared to how they are today.
Mm. Interesting you should point that. I was looking at some of them today, and there was a Van de Graaff Zeppelin, and most of them were silver, but some of them were yellow, bright yellow. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, wow, was that a bad day at the office? Or what was it?
Well, just be careful as far as what you see online and whatnot, because you know, there are knockoffs that are there that
really?
People are, you know, abusing the name and the image. And because some of the dent toys are very valuable. I've seen them in, you know, $20, $40, and more $1,000 individual individual toys. And so you've got to be careful with really the history behind anything that you might want to get. There's quite a group of collectors here in the Allentown area of toys. David Bausch in particular.
Oh yes, Dave Bausch. Sure.
Was, you know, very very big into it. My Uncle Dick really got into it as well, and others that really looked over these. But you have to, you know, just watch out for what's the real deal and what's not.
Yeah, I was actually mentioning when we were speaking before the show that I was watching Antiques Roadshow the other day and one popped up on there. So you do see them all over the place. And, you know, that was somewhere that was not even close to here. So just shows how, you know, wide and far they went.
And you'll be hosting at the museum, hosting a talk on December 14th. I believe Peter and Charlie will be talking a little more about.
Yep. So it'll be December 14th at 2 p.m., it comes with museum admission, so if you're coming to check out the museum and the exhibit, there's no extra fee for the talk. And, you know, they'll be talking about the family history, not only of the hardware company, but I think you'll be talking about the Leonardo horse as well. And then, obviously, you can check out all the toys on display, too.
Can you, Glenn, would you just for a moment tell us about these activities that are coming up very quickly about the Tinker Time? I think that's so exciting.
So, the day after the talk, which is the 15th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., we'll be having, it's called Family Tinker Time, and it's a gingerbread building activity for families. Mm-hmm. It's free, and kids are free that day. And basically, you want to take the usual gingerbread house building and kind of inspire kids to do some sort of, you know, engineering thinking about it instead of just throwing gingerbread together. So we're doing a little bit of an industrial aspect to the usual gingerbread houses to kind of fit in with the holiday theme. Huh.
Wow, that's really super. Absolutely.
I'm told that one of the real popular items of the dent toys was actually not a toy, but fencing that can go around the base of a Christmas tree.
Oh, and, really? Was it?
Yeah, and also from the standpoint of the dent toys, it's special as well, too, because my Uncle Dick had Santa Claus come into his elementary school classroom at the Franklin School and gave everyone in the class a dent iron toy back in the 1930s.
Oh, wonderful. Wow. Well, thank you, Glenn Kaler, for having this exhibit happen. And we hope, we look forward to many, many more as exciting. Thank you, Peter Dent, for being a good friend and from a family of inspiration all around. Special thanks, too, to our friend Steve Aronson, our technical engineer, who decided at an early age the toys can calm the soul, bring laughter to those who are saddened, and that toys can come to life, especially at Christmas. Thanks, Uncle Stevie.